This is the Sounding Board Podcast with Hutchie and Damo. Thanks to Drinkwise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to Drinkwise.
Good to have your company on the Sounding Board for Drinkwise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to drink wise. Series 6, episode 42. And in a different style of show today, we've managed to track down someone in a world exclusive. We've had two guests in the series that we've been running here, into its sixth season of the Sounding Board. We've had Adam from Ralph's Meats, and we've had Dennis Pagan. Neither really worked as an interview topic. I can claim with good authority that the exclusive today, Craig Hutchison, will be something that our listeners will enjoy. It's a world exclusive we're about to release.
Yeah, you kept that pretty quiet. I'm looking forward to hearing that. I think you're a bit hard on Ralph from Ralph's Meats.
No. Adam from Ralph's Meats, he's a very good man. But we worked out after Dennis Pagan, we don't want interviews on this show. We're going to go down that path again today, though.
Not terribly interested in anyone else's opinions, are we? Let's be honest. Hello, Damo. You need a rethink. I'm calling for an all-points bulletin.
Oh.
All-points bulletin. You need a rethink on your strategy and your contracts.
Right.
This is what's happened. Let's lay our cards out on the table. Your 22 weeks annual leave, which you are interrupting today on two more occasions to do the
if we just want to loosely deal with facts, Hutchie, let's go with the 10 that it is. But
22 weeks?
10.
Plus.
Which is still short of what you pay Gary Lyon and Tim Watson and Jared Waitley to have on your books of SEN. So let's put that on the record.
22
too.
Weeks plus time in lieu, I'm told.
No, there's no time in lieu. It's just a straight 10.
Plus overtime.
And that would still be unders on what I actually would be owed.
Let me get to my point and stop interrupting.
I should have 22 and then it'd be square.
You've interrupted two of these for the last two episodes of the Sounding Board for the year, so thank you for that. It's caught on. So what you've done now is set a bar for the rest of the football industry.
Well, you pay three people that I know to have these holidays.
Hang on.
A little longer.
You've set a bar in football journalism. Others are following it. Tom Brown's taken his extended leave.
Right.
And the season's extended and the opportunists have just hovered. Like last week, Liam Jones, bang, Mitch Cleary. Correct me if I'm wrong. Hugh Greenwood, bang, Mitch Cleary.
Yep.
Sam McClure, bang, names the player. Like, the footy season's alive and well in November, and because you've created this subculture of leave in the summertime, the other big dogs are following, and the young brigade have come over the hill. This is a problem. We need a reset here.
It's always dangerous to take holidays, isn't it?
It's dangerous to take holidays.
It's also
Mitch is getting a lot of disproportionate hang time at 7, and he's doing a great job.
He couldn't
There's
have
no
started.
Split screens right now. It's just one big screen.
He couldn't have started any better, Mitch, could he?
Well, he's rolled out. What's he going? Bang, bang.
Mm.
And
have you broken bread with him yet?
With Mitch?
Since he walked out on you? And you?
No need to. I just admire what he's doing. And it'll make Tom hungry to come back as well. Look, the footy news is 365 now, isn't it?
Yep.
Particularly in a COVID era, there is no off-season. We're going to have vaccine stories and COVID stories and outbreak stories and all this sort of, you know, hard-to-deal-with stuff.
There's a few more to come, I think, in that front,
yep.
For what it's worth, Hutchie. It's not, I don't think Liam Jones isn't the only one in that space.
Give me your opinion on Liam Jones for starters.
My opinion is he can do whatever he wants. I've said a few times on this show even, Hutchie, I fully respect what anyone wants to do in any facet of their life, provided they're convinced and convicted by it, of their own thoughts and processes. But there are consequences for your actions, and right now I don't know whether Liam sees those consequences, because at some stage pretty soon the $500,000 that was coming in by way of a guarantee won't be. And on top of that, Hutchie, and this is the other aspect of it too, and again, this is just my opinion on Hutchie, he can't check into a restaurant under the rules of this state at the moment. So I don't know what he's going to be doing. He's going to have no money to do that anyway. And he can't actually enjoy that freedom that others can anyway. So I don't get what the end game is what I'm trying to get to. Do you have a different view to it than that?
Not really. I think he's made the wrong decision, but it's his right to make whatever decision he wants. It's not for anyone else to judge it.
I would, again, he doesn't have to talk. No one has to talk. He's made his decision and he lives with it. I would like to know and hear from him what it was that drove him to this extremity on it.
Yeah, I just think it's a wrong call, but it's his call. And so he's entitled to make, in life he can live whatever version of life he wants to live, as long as he don't affect anyone else. And that's going to be the challenge for him, is not to affect anyone else.
Now, we spoke some months ago about doing an awards. I think it was on the back of someone doing awards elsewhere, Hutchie. And we sort of on the run decided to couch the awards we're going to do as the Soundies.
Yep.
And I think we should do that. So as we talk today, under our arrangement. I think there's 2 weeks to go. So I think maybe in
under our arrangement, two more weeks. Waving a contract at me all of a sudden in the holidays. Our arrangement.
Well, I've actually had to come in and break into the time I've got off.
You got commercial. You're episode counting now on a podcast.
What I'm trying to say is inside a fortnight.
Under our arrangement.
I think we probably wasn't the best word to use, was it? Before the sounding board goes into hiatus, then maybe, Hutchie, we should have the soundies. And as such, I think we should also have a theme song for the sounding board as well. But can we show a bit more creativity than the world sport is showing at the moment? Because I just want to bring you, Hutchie, all in the space of the last month, the use of this particular song. We'll go backwards. This is the Australian T20 team in the UAE after winning the T20 World Cup. All right, so we've got it already queued to go, Hutchie, but it sounds the same. The Western Bulldogs did that after winning a preliminary final against Port Adelaide, and then the Melbourne Footy Club went into the centre of Optus Stadium and did the same thing. Can we, when we identify our song, not have it as Freed From Desire?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's interesting. Like it's been a commonly used sporting theme around the world. Did the Bulldogs miss the memo on that? Like, everyone's been using that song. The Bulldogs took offence like they wrote it, and they wanted to start a punch on it at a nightclub over the use of Freed From Desire.
That was a true story, by the way. I know Campbell Brown has alluded to that on another podcast, but that got pretty fiery over that song.
Were you there?
No, I was made aware of it not long after it.
Why didn't you report it?
Because it was in...
Oh, but hang on. Here we go.
Is it a story, though?
Well, you just referenced it then as if it was.
I'm talking about it on the podcast.
I would reckon if the two grand final teams get into a potential punch on in the Monday after the grand final, damn straight it's a story.
How do you back the potential punch on?
You've clearly got the fatigues up and didn't file.
Now, what I will say is they were not happy with the use of it. But how do you write that? Now, the potential punch on didn't happen.
They didn't write the song. Not like they got around and choreographed it on a Tuesday.
It was rubbing it into their face.
Well,
it was rubbing it right into their face.
I understand the difference.
But I think it was done straight after it.
Yeah. So, I agree with this. So we're going to have the soundies and we're going to have our own themes, and I will commit to doing a little bit more work on that than I've done today. Yeah. Just on Hugh Greenwood, just quickly, I touched on it before. I want your view on this.
Yep.
Because you're a Kangaroos man and been pretty hard on them. Is it a coup for the Roos and is it embarrassing for the Suns?
I wouldn't say it's a coup for the Roos. It's a guy who's going to be 30 by round one next year, who's had a few injury problems and hasn't played 100 games in the time in the game. He's a good player. I think the way the narrative's gone in the 24 hours since it happened is that they're recruiting Marcus Bontempelli. I think they're patting themselves on the back a fair bit over it. It's a nice move. It's a nice move. And it does not at all in any way to me look good for Gold Coast.
I agree with that. He's a good solid player, good role player, and it was good thinking from the Kangaroos. I admire the dash to go and get him. I heard on our Sports Day program last night that we make on 3RW that David Noble said his wife gave him the idea, which was just a lovely story, right? The phone call, and I know you've always liked this player. Have you thought about making a move? And so that's interesting. I don't know if that's how true that is, but that's what he said, the coach. So, good move for the Roos. I mean, it's not...
But is it, though, bringing a 30-year-old in?
I like the entrepreneurialism in it. I'm not a big believer in that age group in growing teams, as you know. But I like the deal side of it.
Yep.
For the Suns, it's no great loss. He's not going to be part of their next period of success. But it's
their next period of success. How about their yet to ever happen success?
But what it is, it's mightily embarrassing. It's a blunder.
Yeah.
It's symbolic of the problems there.
You've got to. I mean, you have a crack at me, Hutchie, and maybe rightly so at times for my general conservatism, but the working backwards from a worst-case scenario is a protection mechanism that should be applied probably more widely than it is in certainly footy clubs.
That's how you live your life.
Working backwards from a worst-case scenario.
Crossing the road, you're running that analogy in the morning in Middle Park. You are. Working back from what's the worst thing that could happen is almost the first sentence of my eulogy at your eventual funeral in about 50 years. In fact, I would start by saying, he did a good job, Damo, getting to 95. and Hutchie, his philosophy of Hutchie, working back from the worst
Hutchie,
thing that
if I last to 95, that'd mean you'd be 90 and, or 91, and you're yeah. not you're not lasting that long, mate. I don't think I'm lasting 95. Yeah. I don't want to be lasting 95.
The over and under.
I reckon
the over and under on me.
I don't want to be talking about an end game, but I don't want to be anywhere near 95, Hutchie. I hope it's about 80.
Yeah, the over and under on me is less than that, I reckon.
What else would you say?
The index betting on me, you're taking the unders, I reckon. Anyway.
What else would you say, though, about me? If I was to reach 80 and you're 76 or whatever, what would you say about me?
No, I just talk about the way you got through life in such a conservative manner that, you know, you'd long ago thought you prepaid your funeral when you were 8. That's how conservative you were. At Tobin Brothers. So, yeah, that'd be my view of your world. But, yeah, working back from the worst-case scenario. Sorry.
Well, working back from a worst-case scenario would have had it whereby you don't put Greenwood into that situation where you don't take him off the main list even for a period of what was going to be 96 hours, 4 or 5 days, before you then recontract him officially under the auspices of the rules at the time. So the zone in which he was placed in that situation allowed the conversation to happen. And if he's not there, if it's another player who's put into that zone, well, you can live with it. But it's
Fundamentally, it was an own goal and a big one. Like, it's a big own goal, that.
You can't justify it.
Tough walking back in the next day, the rest of the players saying, oh, yeah, you know, Hugh's gone. And I know everyone loved him around the place, but, you know, we got that wrong. And, he, you know, it's a tough sell when you are trying to build a culture in a team which has been has had a strained culture for most of its existence.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, players and individuals are generally self-driven, relatively selfish, and need to be. And need to protect their own interests because the clubs really aren't loyal to them anymore than they are to.
And that's what Greenwood's done now, isn't it? He's decided to make the decision for himself, which I absolutely admire. But I want to raise an element of that before we get there, unless you want to jump into that side of it.
This is how it would be going in at Sunset Quarters at the moment. The board would be asking for answers. The admin, the CEO, footy manager, would be saying, look, we had a strategy to remove him from the list. We sat him down and explained it to him. He is a very loyal and strong guy. He understood our decision, and he told us point blank that he would comply with this so we could redraft him to create flex on our list. And we believed him, and we took him on face value on that, and we were honourable to our end of that to him. That's how they would be defending themselves.
Of course they would be.
What they're missing is when you put a player in that position publicly, you then got to deal with the next door neighbour and the bloke across the street. Don't they value you? What? How come they've delisted you? Yep. You were fourth and the best and fairest last year. People, they've got voices in your ear for 2 days, and then you got a wooer. And then you got a partner and a family going, well, hang on, we've got one mob here who want us to be the sacrificer. Yep. And you got another mob here saying, here's $500,000 a year and live in Melbourne.
Well, I heard Sam McClure last night too say it's not a 2-year deal. It's basically a 3-year deal.
Yep.
So one versus three. But your point about people getting into his ear, it's accurate, Hutchie, and it's apt, because he put out this statement himself on the back of the club releasing that information about the contractual situation, saying that it's just clickbait. I will be at the Suns. He doesn't look great right now in putting that out. And I know that means nothing right now. I get that. But it's another example of the media reading the play more so than the people involved in the play.
Yeah, I mean, I think the feedback got to him, didn't it? Like, he was getting hit from everywhere. And it just shows you how silly the rookie list rule is.
Oh, that's another story. I know.
Imagine sitting down to a sport overseas and saying, this is how our rookie list rules works.
Yeah.
You can come into the system 16, 17, 18, you can play for 15 years.
Yep.
And then if you start earning too much,
yep,
we just delist you, and then we call you a rookie as if you're a first year.
But we only pay the $85,000 of the.
But then, if someone gets injured, you can come back in. And
well, Eddie Betts last was a rookie right to the end. At Carlton
needs cleaning up that rule.
He's about 35, wasn't he? Ready?
Needs cleaning up.
Hutchie, what have you made of the John Gruden situation in the States? Famous NFL person, a Super Bowl winning coach from the early 90s, went back to the Las Vegas Raiders as they became for a 10-year deal, $10 million per year, $100 million deal. Year 4 of the deal, resigned about a month ago, for those who don't follow the States sports closely, over comments made in emails, in an email exchange about 10 years ago with an owner of another club, which was being investigated by the NFL for racism. He's now suing the NFL and suing personally, as far as I've read some stories, Roger Goodell, the chief executive officer of the NFL, over the commissioner. He being, John Gruden, being the only person or business of collateral over an investigation to something that didn't relate to him initially. Where's this play out the way you read it?
Yeah, it's getting into murky waters. I'm not as across it as you because I know you follow this very closely.
But just to give one more layer of detail, that 650,000 emails were part of the investigation into the Washington football team, as they are now referred to as, formerly the Redskins, now the football team, as they refer to, and John Gruden's emails to the general manager at the time when John Gruden was a commentator on ESPN and clearly a friend of the general manager, are the only, as far as I know, are the only form of official correspondence to emerge publicly out of investigation into another football team over the very serious topic of racism.
Yeah, I mean, you're retrospectively held accountable to your actions.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And he had to stand down.
How that manifested in the public sense is a legal matter, really, and that's the heart of this issue. But
and there's even an argument too, Hutchie. So there was one email correspondence that was out in the public there for 2 or 3 days, and there was clearly some weight from the NFL to the club, the Raiders, to have John Gruden resign or be sacked. It didn't happen on the back of the one email. Now, part of the John Gruden claim now is that upon there being no action on that one email, a whole raft of other emails then miraculously made their way into the public domain. And as such, by weight of number, the action, that being the resignation, was inevitable. So that's all now part of the claim back.
And privacy is becoming so complicated in these. What's in the public interest in those emails versus what isn't is a really line ball call.
And once you're getting lawyers involved, I don't care, Hutchie, it's no longer a private investigation or anything. Once a lawyer is involved in it, and they leak more than any facet of society, lawyers.
We're seeing... coming from a long way back, we're seeing a great society change, though, aren't we, at the moment? And there's there's some winners and losers in that change, but it's the society is moving to a better place, I reckon. And sport is trying to keep step with that.
Yeah,
that's a challenge. Hey, just to really off topic, just wanted to acknowledge the strength of television and streaming at the moment around. I know you're heading into 22 weeks, so I'm just going to give you a little form guide.
Okay.
Because you're about to go.
I've got 10.
To turn the phone off.
No, I don't even turn the phone off.
Until about March.
I just don't make as many phone calls. I'll certainly receive as many.
No, you'll go. No. You'll slip into family mode. You'll be cooking steak every night. You'll be drinking a bottle of red in the evening. You'll have your little 2 weeks in Sunshine Coast where you put your thongs on and you don't acknowledge anyone who's seen in the coffee shop. I know exactly how this is going to go. You'll get up, watch your Monday morning NFL. You won't return calls for 2 days. Sorry, I might have had the phone off 22 weeks.
I've never had the phone off in my life.
So I'm just going to add to the Netflix. And then you'll get your anxiety around kind of New Year's Day. Oh, footy, you'll be back soon. I need to get a story. I've had a pretty rough year last year. Bye, about February. Where's the next one coming from? And then Mitch will be gone all summer and all of a sudden you'll be under the back foot. So I'm just going to give you a bit of Netflix form guide for the summer.
To relax a bit, Hutchie.
I know you've seen some of these. Succession is in rare form.
Right. I've got to get back to episode one, series one of that one. Yep.
I thought last night's episode, and there'll be a lot of the sounding board family will be listening.
Plot revealing here, Hutchie. No.
I thought it was magnificent last night. The writing in that episode last night was as good as we've seen in a television show in a long, long time. And the decision to do that in a kind of conference center where it was almost like one rolling scene for the bulk of the show was magnificent because you got to deal with the real-time drama. It's in rare form. We've talked a bit about the COVID gap being great for television writing because what happened when all the shows shut down for a year? A couple of things. One, people had more time to write.
Yes.
And two, more writers were available to be hired. And so the best shows got them. And I reckon all these shows came back better than they left.
Oh.
Succession's in rare form.
Yep.
Yellowstone.
Yep.
I'm only halfway through Ep 3. I'll get the second half away.
I've done the first three series of that. I haven't watched the latest offerings, but I will be keen to consume.
And Rip. His wife, partner, the sister, I can't think of a name. Could well be the two most interesting people on television right now.
Yep.
Billions came back way better. I thought we talked about the challenges they had with the lead actor being in England because of the sad passing of his wife.
I've wiped that one.
It came back better. Finished it.
It needed to, but no, I'm done. Done with that.
The Morning Wars is dealing with very difficult social news themes.
Self-indulgent
series
rubbish.
Series 2 has been unrecognisable to Series 1 in its depth.
It needed to be.
In its depth. It's dealt with all sorts of difficult news issues. I'd love you to watch the series so we can review it together.
I just cannot cop the way that's written. No, move on. Next
last,
one.
Last episode this Friday. But if you go back to series one to now, it really is unrecognisable in the way.
There's no way I'm watching series one of Morning Wars again, Archie. I'd love to get that 10 hours back.
In the topics at Challenge. So
I've never seen more self-indulgent script writing for the people involved in the show than the history of TV.
I think it's taken on a significant social cause in series two. And then the last one I'm getting to tonight, and that is Swagger.
The
Kevin Durant produced about the 14-year-old basketball. That's on my list for tonight.
When do you get time to watch anything, let alone multiple series, Archie? I thought you slid in.
Late. Oh, and Ted Lasso was sensational, of course.
There's another one. Yeah. Hutchie, I'd love to tally up all those shows you've just read it off and how many hours it would have taken you to have got to this point to recommend them to me. We're talking multiple hundreds of hours here.
Yeah, I've only just got the four. I've got the five, including Ted. I've got Billions, Yellowstone.
Billions
Succession.
Is about series eight or nine.
A Billions finished now series four or five?
No. I managed to last the end of four or five, I think.
They're my five. I backed them at the exclusion of all other runners.
I'm still, you're like this. When I was watching, I'm very late to the party on Ray Donovan. And then I was watching it, I think it was Stan. And then one day it just disappeared off the platform. I just took it off. I had to again do the old-fashioned way of getting DVDs from JB Hi-Fi so I could just finish this series. So I'm just waiting through the end of that. I'm just about done with that too, by the way. That's a very brutal show.
Now, you've been teasing an exclusive tonight.
I have. I think it's time to get
them,
to it.
Is there anyone here ready for this?
Yep.
Are they coming in?
Jane and I came in earlier to pre-record. I didn't want you to know about this until we actually did it, okay? I know whether it's going to work or it's not, but we're committed to running it, all right? We are committed to running it. And as such, Hutchie, I'll just throw to it, as you would say in the parlance, cold. And in an exclusive for the sounding board today, I have tracked down the mysterious staff writers. Now, sitting across the studio from me today is a person collectively representing the ubiquitous staff writer, staff writers. Good morning to you, Mr. Staff Writer.
Staff Writers is my name. Good morning to you, Damien. It's great to finally break my silence.
It's been a hard journey to track you down. You are everywhere, yet you are nowhere. You're a bit like Banksy. You are across the country, across the world, but no one knows what you look like. No one knows what you actually do. No one actually knows if you're real. But we see you in some form in media outlets every day. By staff writer, by staff writers, and you are now prepared to break your silence away from your platforms.
Yeah, look, this hasn't been an easy decision for me as an individual to go public today. As you know, I changed my name by depol to staff writers at the age of 18 after I was overlooked for a cadetship at the Herald Sun newspaper. I was too qualified for the cadetship. I didn't have any parents or uncles who'd worked there previously, so I was overlooked for a cadetship role. And so as a result of that, I figured the best path forward in journalism was to assume a new identity that would be always needed. And so I went in the next day and I changed my identity to staff writers, and that's how I've been known ever since.
And your life would have changed from that very moment onwards, because it's just taken off. It's a brand within a brand, within an organisation, within any industry within it.
And it is an unusual role in journalism. So I've assumed this identity of staff writers, 25, 30 years ago, and have been one of the most published authors in the country. The unusual thing about my journalistic career, Damien, is that I often read in the paper what I wrote for the first time. Often there's a late-night editor's call where someone's written a story, they don't want their name on it, then the paper don't want to put their name on it, and so they use mine. And that's been part of my lot in life for a long time. I've been authoring stories I haven't read for a long time.
So has it changed? Has that dynamic changed? Did you once set out with a purity of heart to pursue your career as a journalist, and it's morphed into something a little bit more clandestine and a little bit more untoward?
Well, no doubt, because, I mean, if there's anything happy or reasonable about the story being written, I'm not needed. So I fully accept that my role in the room is when someone's scared or a little bit intimidated or a little bit, you know, second-guessing their story a little bit, or the paper itself, whatever the publication, wants to distance itself from my story. So it's difficult. I can't go out for dinner if I walk in and, like, if you ring a restaurant and book a staff writer.
But no one knows who you are, though. That's the beauty of it. So So you wouldn't have that problem that other people have when they put their name to it.
Yeah, but it's my name. So I go, if I go and book a restaurant as staff writers...
But you wouldn't do that.
I have to book under fake names to go out for dinner.
Under Craig Hutchison, for instance.
I can't use my staff writer's name. Obviously, people are permanently angry with something I've written. Generally speaking, I'm only writing things that people don't like.
So how many? So are you saying that you are the only staff writer in the world? Or let's work with Australia. I thought there were hundreds of these.
There's just me, staff writers. I am the only guy. Sometimes I get to see the story I'm about to author. Sometimes I don't.
What percentage would that be, staff writer?
About 1% to 2% of the time I've seen the story before it gets published. And like, there's a couple of things.
And what happens then? Is that when someone with a name and a profile may have a beef against someone else or an organisation but not want to put their name to it? Is that one example of your name?
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, I've got the most restraining orders against me of any journalist in the country.
No, that's the key to it, though. You can't be sued, personally.
Well, I can. My name is Staff Writers. I changed it by Depol. There are some copycats out there. I've seen Staff Writer. I've seen Staff.
Well, Staff Writer has come in a bit hard. Yeah, is that not you?
I take huge offence.
Oh, so you're Staff Writers.
People leave the S off my name.
I thought you were the representative of all of them.
I am Staff Writers. There are positives, though.
How do you work, though, for multiple organisations? Because everyone's got one now. Every single outlet. Your own. Oh, sorry, the one that you once... Well, SEN's got... They've got Staff Writers.
Well, not too often, but it's all centralised via one platform. So they go to my employer, which, of course, is one of the biggest newspapers in the country, and they rent me out on occasion when I'm needed, when it gets a bit dicey.
So you're a gun for hire.
Well, I'm a gun for hire.
A bit like Kane Corns at SEN. He's just hired out everywhere.
The good news is that it's a pretty easy day. Like, I don't actually need to do any fact-checking. I don't need to do any sourcing of my own responses. I just literally get thrown a grenade late in the day normally and said, this one's a bit too hot in the kitchen for ex-journalist.
So
we're going to wheel you in on this.
This is interesting in itself. You don't come up with your own ideas. These are all agendas that no one normally wants to put his or her name to.
Yeah, well, I think we both established long ago, me and my employer, that if my name is pointless on a story that has resolve and backbone to it. So it's really only when... there's a break glass in case of emergency.
So if there's substance to an issue, staff writers is not around it.
Journalists like to have relationships with their subjects. Sometimes it's a little bit hot too. And then there's often commercial interests at stake too. So I'm the ultimate fall guy. I sit next to the editor's office. He never comes in. He doesn't want to see me in the corridor, but I'll just get a knock on the door occasionally. And I know the old staff writers... It's going to be on page 3 tomorrow in the paper.
I work with someone in another guys who loves telling a war story. Mr. Staff Writers, what's your favourite war story?
Well, there's so many to choose from. I mean, I remember there's been times when our owners have turned on political parties on a whim. They've needed really to soften the blow. They can't just turn around one day and say, oh, we're supporting Labor one day and Liberal the next. So then there's a transition period. I'm always calling on those political jobs to be the transition guy for a week until the dust settles,
I'm
often used as a stalking horse. If our employer's got an agenda
like
against...
Like a little recce mission, reconnaissance mission sometimes. Yeah.
Employer's got an agenda against someone but doesn't want to be seen to be...
Yep.
Well, then, yeah, clearly that's my job.
Do you have pride in what you do as staff writers?
I have pride. It is an absolute outrage that I've never won a Walkley. An outrage. I've been one of the most published journalists in the country. Fearless. I've taken more heat, more hospital handballs than anybody. And I watch the quills, and there's no mention of staff writers ever.
Never.
It's outrageous. I take enormous pride in my job. No one has actually been published more and spent less time on it than me.
Have you ever once properly sourced an exclusive?
Oh, I'm sorry, you'll have to explain what that means. Sorry.
Has this worked?
What do you mean, sourced?
Yeah. Have you ever once either... got your own story or been given an exclusive by someone who does trust you as a source and then gone with it under the staff writer's byline?
Have you met a journalist before? Journalists are driven by seeing their name in the newspaper, winning an award for that, spending 3 months on their submission for the Walkleys and the Quills, and then being humbled to win it at the end. That's exactly how a journalist works. I'm only used when the topic is so dicey that neither... paper or journalist wants their name on it.
Now, every journalist has, at some stage of his or her life, published something that they are greatly embarrassed about. It could be 100% wrong. At the very least, there is a level of discomfort about putting his or her name to it. How many times in any given space of an hour would that happen to you?
There's one that springs to mind.
Only one?
Yeah, one that I regret.
what, in one of the last 5 minutes?
I wrote a very positive story on Kevin Sheedy's contribution to Essendon. There was a warm story about his legacy, and I fundamentally believed it and still believed it. Yep. It got published. It got past the subs. That's not my role. I can't be going down Positive Street. And, you know, it's often joked about in the corridors. People walk past me and go, what about that Sheed story where you put your staff writer's name to it and it was positive?
Was that a turning point for you?
It was a turning point. From there, I realised my role in the room was the attack dog, and I've done it since. Anyway, I must go because I've just got to check something, my bylines, on a very controversial story about a push for another entity to go towards net zero by 2030. I must run. Great to talk to you today.
Really good to track you down, and we'll keep your anonymity that way.
Thank you.
So what did you make of that exclusive, Hutchie?
Oh, I can't believe you talked me into doing that. If anyone's still listening to us now at the end of this podcast, I'll be staggered.
Well, as you often say, Hutchie, you don't really care what they think.
Yeah. Oh, that was embarrassing. Satire is not our strength, is it?
Oh, it might be. I think Mr. Staff Writer's made some good points.
Our audience seemed to be fascinated by the staff writer, so we thought we'd have a bit of fun with it.
Did the interviewer ask the right questions?
You were very good. Very good. Might be your finest hour. Maybe you can enter that in the Journalistic Awards. And nominated for his interview with the fictitious staff writers.
Can we put that in the soundies? Can that be the best interview of the year? Oh, well.
Imagine a few editors around town getting a little bit nervous about putting the staff writers on any stories the next few weeks, though. Cheerio to the team at AAP. I'll be sitting there thinking, oh, tuck that one away for a while.
And for all those people who do have an uncle or a father or a mother in journalism, continue to pursue your dreams because
a bit harsh.
No, it's true, Hutchie. Now, I think you think I bang on about this guy endlessly, but I'm fascinated by this man. And he's going to be featuring in the soundies. Peter Volandis. Bruce Clark.
You're obsessed.
Bruce Clark, a long-time veteran, very, very outstanding racing journalist. Had an interview with Peter Volandis during the course of the week on RaceNet. Look, I'm not going to delve deeply into it because I don't know whether it's for everyone. But what I did pick up on was this particular quote that Volandis said to Bruce Clark. Currently, I'm living rent-free in their heads. And the heads to whom he's referring, Hutchie, without naming names, clearly, are the heads that run Victorian racing in its many guises and the many people that do. So for him to say that, he knows he's getting traction, and that will annoy those people even more than he already has.
I mean, I love racing. I enjoy the banter between the two states, and I did read it, and I was quite amused by it. I find him, as you know, like you, quite inspiring the way he charges ahead. And, yeah, it was all good fun.
The day after the Melbourne Cup, we touched on this last week, the day after the Melbourne Cup was run 2 weeks ago, race worth $7.5 million, he just decides to up the race that's been running for 3 years now, the Golden Eagle, up to $8 million, just to make sure that he's now got two races worth more than the Melbourne Cup.
Oh, it's great for the participants. Good on him. A lot of bit of fun. There you go. I think we're out of time, aren't we? Is there one to finish with?
There's a few other issues. Just one more quick one before we go.
What happened with Lawrence Mooney at Triple M?
I read that yesterday. Yeah. We're talking on this particular week on the Tuesday morning. I did see that.
Yep.
I thought he was going okay in Sydney. Sydney, I think it was.
How tough was it for – I see that JB's going back to doing 2 hours a day next year. Imagine having to sell that to him. How tough would that call have gone when he literally wanted to, you know, put the slippers on every day for the last 5 years? Jim, it's Fitzy. There's good news and bad news. The bad news is that we're going to 2 hours. The good news is we're going to 2 hours.
He used to do 2 hours, Hutchie. I don't think that's a big stretch. He actually works a whole lot more and harder than you make out.
No, I know he does. It just feeds my bit of fun. Yes. I'm sure he didn't miss them.
Did you buy a basketball team, another one, the other day?
Yes, we are the new custodians of the Otago Nuggets in Dunedin.
The Otago Nuggets.
In the NZNBL. So incredibly honoured to take on that challenge in Dunedin. So perfect for us and perfect for that community.
Is there anything you won't buy?
We love that community. We've got a radio station in Dunedin. We've got Lee and Kate and our team in Dunedin already as a SENZ business. And then we love the role the team plays in the community and want to enhance and continue to build on that. And the NZNBL is going places and we wanted to be part of it. So,
and will you sell them and buy a rival as you did with Melbourne United and Perth Wildcats?
No, because we had a... we had a small stake. We had a stake in Melbourne United, where as a business, sports entertainment group, we own 100% of the Perth Wildcats and 100% of the Otago Nuggets.
Before we do wind this one up, Hutchie, we always have to, and it's a crucial and very good part of our show, this.
On the sounding board, it's our question of the week for Drinkwise. If you're choosing to drink, choose to Drinkwise.
Ben Delgano Fixter on Facebook Messenger. In recent years with the Trump era, politicians in particular have been able to walk their own path when it comes to telling their own versions of events, their own truth. Do journalists have a responsibility to call it out when pollies or other subjects run with a version of events that are factually inaccurate, as Albo clearly thinks this journo from the SMH has? Not sure exactly what he's referring to there with the reference to the Sydney Morning Herald there, but
I was actually going to raise earlier with you the Scott Morrison and the lie tag that's hanging around and hard for him to shake, and it's been well reported that the versions of that,
hard for him to shake because it's unshakable, I would have thought. He does lie.
Yeah, and I was keen to have I wouldn't mind finding someone rational to have a rational chat with about this, because I think it's a really interesting thing of politics. I know there's no chance of having a rational discussion with you because you get so defensive about the identity that you can't park that and talk about the issue for a moment.
I can't, because he lies.
So what I'm interested in is this. If you disagree with someone's policy in politics,
yep,
you somehow now get tagged with being
left or right,
the entire opposite on that issue, right?
Yeah. But the pollies do that.
Yeah, but in a modern soundbite world, that's getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
So I understand. There's no doubt there was an electric car backflip, right? No doubt. I accept that. But it wasn't nearly as much of a backflip as has been portrayed. It was a fair backflip.
Oh, it's as good a backflip as you can have inside 2 years.
No, it was a fair backflip.
Yeah.
It's probably not the grounds I want to mount this argument on.
No, I wouldn't mount it on that one.
But if you have a policy and I attack your policy, it doesn't mean I'm of the entire opposite view on the topic.
But I don't even know whether some of this, and to Ben's question, I'm not even sure some of it is attacking policy. I feel some of it is just calling people out, and people don't like being called out. And people get to a certain position in their life, and footy coaches are the best example of this, Hutchie. They're not challenged, they're not questioned, they're control freaks. And then there comes a point of that tenure where they are challenged, they are questioned, and they can't control.
And don't like it.
And don't like it. And that's what happens, obviously, but in politics.
It's really, the other spin-off of this is the consequence of the lie has been a topic we've talked about on the sounding board for a long time. Yep. We've argued that the consequence of the lie has diminished by the day.
I would agree with that.
We are now in a free-with-the-truth environment in the world.
Yep.
And I just wonder whether that's getting tested a little bit for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good.
We might be able to
different
park
answer.
That for another day.
No, it's a good question, Ben. We might have touched on part of what you specifically asked, but it is a deeper and wider issue, not just with politicians, but society in general.
We've got to go. I've got a backroom table booked at the Phoenix with staff writers. We're going to have a little ale to finish today, and of course, do it responsibly over water as well, because we choose to drink wise. This has been the Sounding Board, Series 6, Episode 42.
Phoenix.
Thanks for listening to the Sounding Board podcast with Hutchie and Damo. Tune in for questions tomorrow, and to send a question to the boys, email thesoundingboard@sen.com.au, follow the show on Twitter @soundingboardep, and like the Facebook page. It's all thanks to Drinkwise. If you're choosing to have a drink, choose to Drinkwise.